Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Tate Talks. We had a great chat today with my fantastic friend, Christine Gassman of Mail Protector, an ex-colleague. We learned all about her move away from New Jersey, her love of dogs, and finally, yes, finally, the truth about that Paris trip. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Christine. Thanks so much for joining us today on Tate Talks.
Hello, Chris. Thank you for having me. It's been a long time coming.
It has. I would say this is the longest, most anticipated episode ever. So no pressure, but this better be good because we've waited a long time to do this. So
well,
how are you?
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. And how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
So for those that don't know who you are, and I'm sure the vast majority of people have come across you in one capacity or another, but for those who don't know anything about Christine, tell us a little bit about yourself. Any fun facts or interesting snippets you've got to share?
Sure. So my name is Christine Gassman. I'm the VP of Community at Mail Protector. My longest tenure in the channel, first, I've been in the channel for almost 20 years now. My longest tenure was with Datto, where I had the pleasure of working alongside Chris. So I'm VP of Community at Mail Protector now. And basically, I'm, you know, managing, cultivating, growing relationships with MSPs. So Mail Protector is a HIPAA compliant email security, compliance, and encryption platform designed to help keep MSPs and their users safe. So we're channel only, which I love because I love working in the channel and working with MSPs. So that's on the business side of things. Like I said, I've been in the channel for almost 20 years in multiple capacities within the channel, working for vendors, working for distribution, a direct market reseller way back in the day before managed services were a thing. Fun facts about me, I guess I am a huge dog lover, as you know, Chris, because we've had several conversations about my many, many dogs. I am very active in dog rescue. I currently have 5 dogs. I say currently because I'm still actively fostering. I usually end up keeping the pretty tough cases that we can't adopt out, which keeps my life even busier than it already is, but I absolutely love it. And it's very rewarding for me. I'm also a licensed foster parent in the state of North Carolina, where I live with my 4 nephews and niece. They are all teenagers, so life is chaotic as all heck. They are 17, 16, 15, and 14 right now.
Wow, that's amazing. And I guess just drilling into one of those points, well, both points actually, is how you're sort of caring for the dogs and how you're caring for the kids and everything, is how do you juggle that with sort of being so involved in the MSP community?
Well, I always say, and two companies, I've been with 2 or 3 companies since I have taken legal guardianship of my nephews and niece. So quick, you know, kind of recap is, unfortunately, my nephews and niece were placed in foster care a couple of years ago. And I moved down to North Carolina from the great state of New Jersey, which I miss terribly. But I moved down to North Carolina to temporarily get them out of foster care and take care of them, having no idea that it was going to be permanent. So I bought a house down here because I couldn't find anything to rent. So I bought a house down here, especially when I saw the cost of realty down here compared to central New Jersey. And there is a central New Jersey, by the way, for anyone that's listening and wants to fight that good fight, I'm happy to fight it with you. I lived in central New Jersey. So I came down here and it became permanent. And so now here I am 6 years later, taking care of them. I have worked for amazing organizations that have been so incredibly supportive of this huge life change. And specifically speaking of Datto, where again, you know, you and I worked so closely together. I remember when I decided that enough was enough, that I had to come down to North Carolina, I called Rob Ray, and who was the VP of Business Development for Datto at the time and my direct boss. And I just said, this is happening. I'm doing this. If I can't hold my position and do this, I completely understand. Please just give me time to find another job because now I got 4 kids to take care of. And he was like, what he said to me, he was like, shut up. We will figure this out together. So he and the rest of the company was incredibly supportive. And even now, Male Protector is incredibly supportive of what I'm doing. And, you know, being a single parent to four kids is a lot of work and it is tough, but I work from home and I have a flexible schedule and I love to travel because it gives me a break and I love my adult social networking time out on the road.
Yeah, great answer. And the 6 years part shocked me there because I remember when you moved to North Carolina and you purchased what you've referred to obviously as a ranch, which I've always fixed, I think like South Fork Ranch, some kind of huge sprawling estate, which I imagine is how it is.
Which was not, as you know, but it was actually so funny. I was driving somewhere a couple months ago and there was a big sign outside of a new development being built and it was single family ranch homes or something like that. I wanted to take a picture so bad and send it to you. And I was like, see, I'm not the only person that calls them ranch homes or ranches. And it's not a sprawling. Yeah, I think you had said like you picture something out of Dynasty or something like that.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. But time flies. So and it's interesting that, and it's really nice to hear. Obviously, I knew about the Rob situation and Datto, but I'm hoping that I get post-pandemic, especially employers are probably being a little bit more flexible with employees' work-life balance to allow them to sort of get on with the job, and sort of look after families and things as well.
Yeah. And up until I got the kids, I was, you know, a single, motivated, hardworking, not that I'm not now, but I was so, my job was everything. And my career at Datto was everything. And then all of a sudden to, you know, literally overnight having four kids and having to balance that and juggle that, it is hard. It is absolutely hard. It's hard for parents with two incomes and two people splitting the responsibility with kids, let alone one. But again, it's so incredibly important for everyone to have work for a supportive organization that's going to allow you to have that flexibility to take care of your family.
Yeah, and I'm glad, so pleased it's working out for you. So obviously, as you mentioned, we worked together at Datto. I was in the UK and you were in the US, but we're on the same team, on the business development team, which was a great time. I think it's a great time to be in the MSP community, a great time to be at Datto. It's just everything just seemed to align. We worked with great people in the organization. But how did you get there? I mean, what was your career background sort of pre-Datto?
Yeah, so I graduated college. Originally, I wanted to go to law school. I loved everything. Every idea of being a lawyer. I took my LSATs, which is the law school admission test. I took a prep course for it. I was ready to go. And I had to make the decision that it was not going to work out. I was in student loan debt already. I didn't have the bandwidth and resources to be able to go to law school. So I kind of, you know, waitressed for a while and partied a little bit after college, got a beach house with my friends, and I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. So I substitute taught for a while, was going to go that route to get my teaching certification. And then I was running out of medical insurance, to be frank. That's how I got into the IT industry. I was running out of medical insurance and I'm like, okay, I need a job stat. This is getting serious. So my roommate at the time, who actually is still in the IT channel, my college roommate at the time, who's still in the IT channel, she now works for Sophos and has for years. She started working there from an acquisition, but she was working for this company called Programmers Paradise. And in my head, I'm like, I'm not working for a company called Programmers Paradise. No. But she kept pushing me. And I'm so glad I listened to her. I went and interviewed. I started out as like an inbound / customer service rep. Really enjoyed it. I moved to an sales administrative position where I work for two incredible women sales managers that taught me a lot. And so from there, Programmers Paradise was a division of a parent company that had the reseller side, because it was a direct market reseller at the time, and a distribution side. So I had the opportunity to see what it was like working for, you know, a reseller then working for the corporate company, managing vendor relationships to both educate the sales teams, both selling to end users and selling to resellers and value-added resellers, direct market resellers. Because again, this is going way back before managed services, you know, was really a thing. It was still mostly perpetual license sales and so on. So I got a lot of opportunity and got a lot of preview, I guess, of vendor partnerships and what it's like working with vendors. Then I joined the distribution side of it and worked there for a while in doing both sales and business development. And I made a lot of contacts working at within all three of those divisions. So from there, I went and joined StorageCraft. That was back then it was StorageCraft. They're now ArcServe. Back then, that was my first real experience working in business continuity. And from StorageCraft, I went to Datto. And then from Datto, I had joined an anti-phishing company. Loved it, absolutely loved it. It was a startup out of Israel. I was the only employee in North America. So really going from a company like Datto, where you know we had 2,000 employees at the time, and we had a whole business development team, going to being myself only doing everything was a bit of a change, but I loved it. And it gave me a lot of experience, you know, starting like from the ground up again. And then they were acquired within 6 months of me working there. So I left and now I'm here at Mail Protector in email security.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And StorageCraft, that comes up quite a lot. I think a lot of people sort of cut the teeth at StorageCraft actually with hindsight in the channel. And obviously they did quite a lot with the sort of business continuity in the early days of raising awareness around that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because, you know, looking at the how Datto grew so exponentially and what a great organization it was to work for, I remember, I'll never forget, when I started telling some of my MSP partners that I was leaving StorageCraft. And when one of them specifically asked me where I was going and I had said Datto, and he said, oh, he's like, don't do it. And then he started telling me some of the stories about Austin McCord answering the tech support phone line with a British accent, right? Which, you know, we've heard that story multiple times. If you haven't, you know, early on in the days, Austin, apparently, I don't know this with certainty, but apparently Austin would answer the phone in different accents to make it look like we had more employees than we did. But I'm so glad that I did. Datto was an amazing experience and I learned a lot from everyone that I worked with. I miss it. I miss working at Datto for sure, but it really gave me a lot of experience.
Yeah, the same. And it's similar, I guess, now you mentioned it, it's pretty similar to me. I left Datto and went to Mikey, which was a small company. I was there only a couple of people in the UK, probably 50 employees totally. So it was a completely different situation to being at Datto. But yeah. Then Mikey were acquired by JumpCloud. And so I'm now kind of back into kind of a much larger company again with teams of people. And I think there are definitely pros and cons of both. I think this, you can kind of, in a smaller organization, you can kind of get more, you can make a decision and just do something a lot faster, but you've not got a team to help you execute, which is the problem.
Yeah, well, and you know what? It's crazy is that a lot of our friends, formerly Datto employees, former Datto employees, you know, they had such long tenure, myself included, such long tenure at Datto, and then leaving there and going to other organizations. There's acquisitions. There are organizations that want to go the MSP route from direct and enterprise, so they hire a bunch of people that have experience in the MSP channel, only for 6 or so months later them to decide that, no, this isn't moving fast enough. We don't want to go this route. So I've seen a lot of my friends, I hate to say jump around because that sounds negative, but that's in essence what I did a little bit until I found my footing. And I think I found it here at Mail Protector. And I'm super happy.
No, it's great to hear. And it is looking, like you say, in the colleagues in the UK and the colleagues that we know from our old team, I think the ones that have left Datto, I mean, some are still there, but everyone seems to have kind of found a good home for themselves now, and everyone still stays in touch. And it's it was a great time, no doubt about it.
Well, it's so funny. I'm seeing now, specifically, you know, I plan all of our events for Mail Protector, and I'm seeing names come across or on LinkedIn of people that I haven't seen in a couple of years from Datto. And I'm like, okay, I recognize them. They're going to write a boom. It's going to be, you know, kind of a Datto alum reunion, specifically at Write a Boom. I know there's a lot of former Datto folks attending, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it is. It's just it, you have to go around just seeing people in different, same people, just different t-shirts, try and work out where they're working now, which is really cool. So on to the next question, and you touched upon one there actually, when it comes to new MSP vendors coming into the marketplace and some not sticking it out and changing or whatever. But what are you seeing the challenges for either MSPs or vendors in 2024 and beyond?
Well, actually, the first thing that I think of is I mentioned I just recently listened to the Tate Talks you had with Philip Morgan, and I can't stop thinking about his comment about the single pane of glass, how vendors say that we'll make this so easy for you. You only need to look in one place. You know, I think that the vendor noise is very loud and overwhelming, and we see it at events. There's new vendors that are popping up all the time, you know, selling their value. And it's, I think it's challenging for MSPs to find the time to navigate through, even if they're actively looking for a new solution because something isn't working for them, just finding the time it takes to do a review of new products and then the migration if they choose to onboard those new products. I think that's very challenging. And you know, these MSPs are going to these events and they're getting on lists and they're getting constant calls from vendors. I mean, that's business, it's what we do, right? But I think the vendor noise is pretty loud, if you will, amongst the MSPs.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've spoken about that with other people, and I 100% agree because I think we're both huge advocates for events. I was working in an MSP in the UK. We were at a Zenith Infotech partner who were kind of a competitor. Well, we're a
Wow, we're
competitor of
dating
Datto.
ourselves.
Yeah, we are absolutely.
I love it.
But
Love
and I
it.
was at an Autotest Community Live event and saw Datto, and I thought, hang on, this kind of looks a little bit like the Zenith product we've got, but this look seems to actually work. And so it was kind of cool to go to an event and do that, but it would be a handful of vendors, a handful of sponsors. Now, and I used to like to pride myself on thinking I knew pretty much every vendor in the room or everything. If I go to an event now, I'd imagine at least two, at least a third of them, I've never even heard of the company before. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm attending Kaseya Schnizzfest next week in Phoenix. Gary Pika's True Methods group, and I'm looking at the other vendor sponsors and where my booth is located. And there are a number that I've never seen before, which is it's exciting, right? I'm excited to meet the new vendors coming in and, you know, see if we could possibly partner up together or anything like that. But you know, there's several of them that I don't recognize it that recognize. And it's not a huge, it's not like an IT Nation or a DattoCon. There's not a whole lot of sponsors, but there's several new ones on there because again, these companies are popping up left and right.
Yeah, and it's so difficult for MSPs. And did you say it, you know, from the vendor side of the fence, we spend a lot of money on sponsoring these events. I mean, it's a significant budget, but you're absolutely right. I do feel for MSPs. The day they get back from the event, the phone's probably ringing non-stop with 100 vendors contacting them after IT Nation or trying to get a piece of that. Yeah.
And you know what, I think for the most part, because I'm you know in a lot of MSP and other IT related channel Facebook groups and such, and I think a lot of MSPs are understanding that, you know, they're trying to do the same thing with prospective clients and they get it, but it absolutely can be overwhelming. And you know, sometimes within organizations there's a lack of communication and someone gets called too many times by the same vendor or something like that. So I feel for them, but it you know, it's the trade show process, right? And one thing I wanted to mention too, and Chris, you and I have had a conversation about events and such, and there are just so many events. Not, and I say that not just from a vendor perspective of I don't have the budget to attend all the ones that I want to, but from an MSP's perspective too. Like I've been talking to MSPs all day long, and you know, I'm asking them if they're going to this event or that event so we can plan meetups and such. And they're like, "There's just too many events. There's too many events. I can't go to them all. I have to be very selective in what events I go to," or they'll choose to send other staff to certain events depending on what the content, you know, and the goals of the event are and such. But there's just so many events. I love them all. I would do it all the time. Get me out of this house. Get me out on the road.
Yeah, I know you would, and I would, I guess. But I think, I mean, do you think that the kind of a event attendance or has changed since the pandemic? Are people kind of fully returning to events, or is there still a place for virtual events? I mean, I never found, as a vendor, I found virtual events pretty ineffective. But I guess from a if you as a sponsor, I guess if you're hosting the event, it was probably okay. But I find virtual events difficult because no one's going to, in a coffee break at a virtual event, people are going to walk around the house or do something else, not come and chat to a sponsor.
Yes, I agree that virtual events it's just not the same. You don't have that engagement. You don't have that face-to-face conversation. There's been events that have tried to have like Zoom rooms set up and those kinds of things, so you can still be face-to-face, but it just, I mean, we had a situation where someone parked themselves at our table, and so we were both on screen and they weren't muted, and they got up and walked away, and the guy's yelling at his wife and screaming at his wife. I'm like, and I couldn't kick him out. So I contact the event organizer. I'm like, you gotta bounce him. Like, he's yelling. Like, it's just, there's so much that, well, first of all, there's so much that can go wrong with that. And I have horror stories, not for me, thankfully, but from the other members. But yeah, it just wasn't the same. It wasn't the same engagement. It's not the same as having that face-to-face conversation. So yeah, we had to do virtual for a while, right? It's all we could do. But I think for the most part, we're back. I think people are cautious and careful, but I think we're back. The only events mostly that I see virtual now are hybrid, right? So, I know Robin Robbins boot camp, her big seminar, she's got a hybrid model. She's expecting, I think, over 1,000 MSPs, and that's always a great event. But she's just expecting about 1,000 MSPs, and I don't know how many on virtual, but she gives the virtual option. So people don't want to travel, they don't have to, they can still, dial in and listen and get the content, and everything like that. But yeah, I think virtual events standalone are much less common now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the travel is becoming an issue. People probably don't want to spend time traveling. It's expensive and they want to spend more time in the office. So to trying to get them to those events is more and more difficult. So, and it's if you're an MSP, it's a case of picking which one. Do you go all in to go to IT Nation, or do you go to DatoCon or Schnitzfest, or what are you going to do? Or
Well,
more
I
regional
agree with you.
events.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Actually, one of the things that I have planned, I've done it in the past a little bit, but one of the things that I have planned as far as our, kind of a event strategy is offering up free travel, like offering to cover travel for a future event. Right. So we've done some things where it's like, oh, you enter in this raffle to, win a vacation for two or something like that. But we want to reinvest back in MSP's businesses. So just for example, for, Schnizfest, we are doing a raffle to cover travel to a future True Peer meeting. So they're going anyway, like the True Peer members are going. So we're doing a raffle and covering the travel cost for them to go to that next True Peer meeting, because we also obviously want to offer something as an incentive, of course, but we also want to help reinvest in their business, invest in their business. So
And I said, well, that's a great initiative and a good idea, which leads on to, I guess, what I was going to ask next was about your role now at Mail Protector. I mean, VP community, I guess, what does that involve, and how do partners sort of get in touch and engage with you?
yeah, so I basically it's all things channel engagement, right? So I'm running our event strategy, both deciding on what events we're going to do, what partners of ours are active in what communities, so we can make sure we're meeting them face to face, make sure we're at the events that they're going to, deciding on the engagement strategy at the events, making sure our messaging is down pat. We respect MSP's time, and we know that they go to these events and they're walking the floor and they're, having conversation after conversation. So respecting their time and trying to, give our message and what we do and our value, and as quickly as possible, to not waste their time. I also run our partner advisory council, which I am a huge proponent for, or of, I should say, because I'm out on the road all the time. I'm talking to MSPs all the time, but the conversations that I'm having don't always get back to our executive leadership team, right? So having the partner advisory council gives me an opportunity to have the executive leadership team at Mail Protector hearing the same thing I'm hearing when I'm out on the road. So I just launched a new pack, because I've been with Mail Protector now about 7 months. We just launched a new pack. We're actually having our live meeting the end of next month. But so far, the feedback that they've given us has been really, really invaluable. So we've got that. We also have a partner advocacy group that I set up. So basically, MSP partners of ours that are first in line for beta testing, you know, feedback, anything, any pre-release information. So, you know, we want them to know that they're in it with us. So they get pre-release information before anyone else does. And we request feedback on things. There are go-to guys and girls to help us help them and continue to increase our support of the community.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And I'm a huge advocate of advisory boards in general. In fact, we're about to launch one at Jump Cloud. And we also have kind of early access programs for MSPs mm-hmm. to get them on board. But yeah, I think advisory boards or councils or whatever we call them are a great way to get that message across to leadership. And also, you know, a small amount of MSPs representing the whole community. And I think we can learn so much from it. So, and we you know, did so well with that at Datto. So it's something that I'm a huge advocate of.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, I've been running partner advisory councils or boards, right? Each company says it differently, but I've been running them for years. And I made a lot of mistakes along the way. And now I think I've got the process down pat to ensure that participation in our PAC is a two-way street and we're communicating effectively with the PAC members. So they show up live and they give us all this great feedback. Well, I want them to know what we're doing with that post, you know, these live meetings and such as well. So really excited about that meeting coming up.
Yeah, no, that's 100% key because people soon get disillusioned if they keep giving the feedback and they're not hearing where it's going. Even if it's kind of, no, you know, we can't do that or we're not doing that or that's not going on the roadmap. It's as long as you sort of feed that information back, that's vital.
Yes, exactly. Because what we don't want, and, you know, this has happened in my experience, you know, in the past is they've got all this great feedback. We got it. And then a couple months later, they're like, okay, well, what happened with that? Ooh, we decided not to run with it. Well, it would have been should have been communicated to them. So I've learned along the way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure that'll be a huge success. So yeah, good luck with that. So changing gears slightly, talking about what you do when you're not working in the channel. Obviously listening to Tate Talks, you've already mentioned you do that as very much the first thing you would do. But apart from that, do you listen to other podcasts or read books or movies, Netflix? What do you do when you're trying to get some downtime?
Yes, 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 and yes. So I am a huge true crime podcast listener. So I'm based out of Greenville, North Carolina, and Malprotector's headquarters are in Greenville, South Carolina, which is funny, but it's about a 5-hour drive. I opt to drive it so I can listen to my true crime podcast. But my airport at home is really small, so I'd have a layover anyway. And by the time it all comes down to it, just easier to drive. But I love true crime podcasts. So the last one, I listened to all the Serial podcasts. Just I love the suspense of it all. The latest one I've been listening to is Stolen. It's again, true crime. I just love everything about it. Reading books. Yes. I actually started to read the books that my kids are reading in school, like alongside them. So we can talk about it, or at least I can talk about it and they just ignore me or roll their eyes at me. So currently I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird again, because my 15-year-old is reading it, but it's nice because it gives me something to talk to them about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that that's kind of non-business related. When I speak to a lot of people, they're kind of all of their podcasts or MSP business
well,
podcasts.
Well, I know I should. So, I know yeah. I should talk about channel podcasts that I listen to, but guess what? True crime is my jam.
No, I'm the same. And I think of the Philip Morgan podcast, I think you mentioned, I explained there. I don't read enough books. I just don't. And audiobooks go in one ear and out the other. So they're no use to me whatsoever.
You know what? I actually tried an audiobook. I'd never done it before, but I tried an audiobook. It was something kid related, right? Because I do a lot of reading kid related because, you know, again, I was shoved into this life very abruptly after not having kids of my own. So I'm like ripping my hair out, like handling preteens and kids and like going crazy. So I read an audiobook or I listened to an audiobook that someone had recommended to me. And it was a great book, but it had great content, but I had such a hard time paying attention to it. Like I was like, oh, I'll listen to it while I clean. And I couldn't pay attention to it and I couldn't absorb it. So I'm never going to do an audiobook again. But I actually did just read a book that my CEO, David Setzer, had given out to us at our team week, excuse me, a couple of weeks ago. It's called The Go-Getter. It was a quick read and it was good. And the message is really solid. So it's by Peter B. Kine, K-Y-N-E. But it is a really good story. Yeah.
Okay. I'll link to that in the description and I'll check it out. But the problem I've got is I just can't seem to get to grips with books at all. And I've tried. But I mean, as an example, I've got right behind me, you'll probably be able to see it on the bookshelf, I've got Atomic Habits, and I've probably read about 5 pages of it. And I can't even get into the habit of reading enough about forming habits. So that's
well,
where I'm
you
at.
Know, well, and that's the thing. And life is so hectic. It's so busy, not just in the channel, in every industry. And there's kids and there's work and there's dogs and cats and whatever else. It's hard for me to just sit. It's hard for me to just sit and open up a book because my mind is going a million miles an hour and saying, okay, you could be spending your time better doing this or doing that. But with my kids reading and wanting to, of course, set a good example for them and reading the books that they're reading, I've been committing to sitting down and focus on reading. And I'm trying to stay ahead of my nephew with To Kill a Mockingbird, but I'm falling a little bit behind. But that's a way, because I don't do anything for myself. Like, I just don't. But if there's an angle on it that gives to somebody else, which is being able to have a conversation with my 15-year-old about something that he's into, something that he's doing, it's motivating for me.
Yeah, good. And just one book, as you were speaking, one book popped into my head, which I did read in its entirety, which was a very thin book, but it was given to me by a friend of ours who sadly passed away, Andrew Stewart, and it was Who Moved My Cheese? I don't know if you've come across that book by Spencer Johnson. I think he sent me that at the time of the data acquisition of Autotask, when everything changed in our world.
Yeah,
kind of. That was a book to try and explain how to try and navigate through this change, and it did genuinely help. So maybe I should try and get into the habit more. But that's probably the last book, business book or development book that I kind of read through in its entirety.
Yeah, and Andrew Stewart, let's just stop and mention him and some of the great memories that we have with him. And for anyone that's not familiar, Andrew Stewart was, I don't forget his exact title, but he ran our EMEA operations for Datto, and unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And he was a personal friend and, of course, a work colleague of both Chris and mine. And he was an amazing, amazing human being.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason I ended up at Datto, without a doubt, and it was... yeah, it was so tragic and it was so young. But it's nice to know people that are kind of continually, that I speak to all the time, that are still being touched by him and referencing stories and things to try and keep him alive in memory, if nothing else. So, yeah, it's very, very sadly missed.
Speaking of memories, shall we talk about DattoCon Paris? You want to throw a jab at me there?
DattoCon Paris. Yes, absolutely. Well, I wasn't going to mention this because, well, what's Paris famous? What's the most famous landmark in Paris, you think?
The Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to go to Paris, where do you think we should definitely not miss the opportunity to go to? Right?
Well, in fairness to me, I just incorrectly, of course, assume that you've been to Paris before. With all of your worldwide travels, I just assumed that you'd been to Paris. So what happened was we were prepping for DattoCon Paris in, was it 2018?
19.
And so Rob Ray always took the team out for a great kind of sightseeing tour or adventure in whatever city or country we were in for DattoCon. So he rents this great big bus. I think it was raining, right? Was it raining?
Mm-hmm. It was raining.
And there was a ton of traffic all around the Eiffel Tower. It was at night. And we had dinner and drinks and all that fun stuff. And the bus pulls over for us to get out and go see and take pictures. Well, I had to use the restroom. And so I asked my friend Chris Tate here to come into a restaurant with me because there's no public bathrooms around. I asked for Chris to come into the restaurant with me and the restaurant was packed. I'm like, okay, we've got to order a drink. Like, we can't just come in here and use the bathroom. So Chris orders us drinks. I go to the bathroom, I come out, and they're already calling us, telling us to get back on the bus. So we left our drinks. I don't think we had a sip. Well, you probably did, but left our drinks and ran out, got on the bus, and then left. And not until after did Chris tell me that he has never been to Paris and has never seen the Eiffel Tower. And I'm like, dude, you should have told me. I would have made you come with me.
But no, I've still not seen it. That, yeah, I did. I don't think we drank much of the drink, and it was.
Well, and if anyone knows Chris at all, you know that he does not let things slide. He will remind you about it over and over again and hold it over your head, which I one of the things I love about him. But still to this day, he's like, oh, that's a beautiful picture of the Eiffel Tower. I wish I could have gotten one.
Well, yeah, maybe one day I'll get to go back, fingers crossed. But that may have been my only chance. That's the annoying thing, right?
Stop it. Hop on a train. Get over there.
Okay, right. Well, final question, because we're over time, and this has been so good. But what advice would you give to someone just starting in the MSP space now, on the vendor side or the MSP side? Or I guess a different way to ask that, if you were starting it all again, what would you have done differently?
First, what I would have done differently is I wouldn't have been so closed-minded. You know, I said earlier, I saw the company named Programmer's Paradise. I'm like, I don't want to work for a company like Programmer's Paradise. And I thought that without even looking into it. So first, I would highly suggest being more open-minded about opportunities that are put in front of you. Because my friend worked there. I knew I could get an interview. It was my job to sell myself, but I knew I could get an interview. So I had an opportunity presented to me, and I was a little bit standoffish about it simply because the name. So first, just be open. And then second, well, be open-minded, I should say. And then second, be open to exploring other opportunities within the channel. There's so much opportunity for anyone to get involved in the channel, right? Like I said, I started on inbound sales. I moved to sales administration. I did marketing and vendor relations, selling ad space. You know, I've managed business relationships on the reseller side, a distribution side, and then for a vendor. So I tried it all early on, and I found where my sweet spot was and what I love to do. And that's on the MSP relationship management. That's pretty much what sums up what I do, right? We're going out to these events, trying to choose the best events and the best engagement strategy to talk to as many MSPs as we can and form relationships. And again, that's one of the biggest things that I love about this industry in general. Going back to Philip Morgan at Pax 8, the podcast that you guys did a couple months ago, he mentioned something about going to an event and networking with people and just getting to know people. And if business comes out of it, great. If not, you made new connections, you made new industry friends. And that resonated with me really well because I'm the same. I am an extrovert. And I know you guys talked about introvert, extrovert. What was the other one? Advovert?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like kind of in between, yeah. But I am a huge extrovert and I just love being out at trade shows and, you know, meeting new people and networking with them. And that's what I tell to any new women specifically that I see joining in the channel. You know, I'm a big proponent of mentoring young women and getting them into this industry and keeping them and helping them grow. And that's what I always say is, you know what, this is relationship building. And that's one of the things that I love about it. But, you know, again, be open-minded. Again, I was closed-minded about the name of the company and it really helped start my career in the channel. And then second, be open to new opportunities. You know, we're so quick sometimes to say, no, that's not within my wheelhouse. I'm not going to take a chance at it, but take a chance on it. Try. There's so much opportunity here. It doesn't have to be just sales. It doesn't have to be just marketing. There's a lot outside of that as well.
Yeah, fantastic advice. And I know your enthusiasm is really good because, you know, I think everyone that sees you at events, they know this, you speak to them, you're not selling or pitching, you're just trying to build connections. And I think that's such an important thing. So that's fantastic advice.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, that's it. We're all done. Thanks so much for coming on, finally.
Thank you for having me.
No, getting the Paris story out there, so it's it's something that people can sort of sympathise with me, but if not seeing the Eiffel Tower.
Well, listen, that's a lesson to you. Stick up for yourself. Say no, Christine. I will not go with you. I'm going to see the Eiffel Tower.
If you ever tried saying no to you, that's the...
I was actually just thinking that in my head. I was just thinking...
it was posed as a question, but it very much wasn't a question in my eyes. I was leaving that bus and going into that restaurant to buy a drink that we didn't even get to consume. But it was good. It was good fun anyway. And that was a great Datto Con. It was my final Datto Con actually, because I left shortly after that, and then the pandemic kicked in and everything changed. So yeah, that was the last of the kind of old era Datto Cons in Paris, which was super good and great memories from there as well.
It was. And Chris, I could talk to you all day long. This has been a lot of fun, but I know we have to wrap up. But thank you again for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks again. And I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, there you are. The truth has finally been revealed. The Paris trip story has finally been shared with the nation. Hope you enjoyed, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thanks so much for Christine for coming on. I certainly did. It was great fun. Always great to catch up. So thanks again for joining us. Also, if you're interested in this kind of thing, don't forget, I've also got another podcast, the Jump Cloud Partner Podcast, which comes out weekly. I'd love it if you could check that out as well. Just search Jump Cloud Partner Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.